Blog Talk Radio.
Welcome to Homeopathy World Community Blog Talk Radio, creating waves of awareness over the airwaves, via the internet, and by friends telling friends they care, working in unity to promote homeopathy around the globe. Every Sunday through Thursday, join us for a personal tour of Who's Reading the Organon, a show hosted by HWC founder and homeopath Debbie Brooke. She invites you to comment and call in to contribute your thoughts as we complete reading Samuel Hahnemann's Organon. Let's go!
Hi, I'm Debbie Brooke, founder of Homeopathy World Community, taking a little time out in the day to begin with some inspiration, talk a bit about current events, and read the words of Dr. Samuel Hahnemann in his Organon of Medicine. Today is October 3rd, 2010, and you're listening to show number 105. Thanks for joining me. It seems like it's a little bit quiet out there today. Maybe everyone's out enjoying the sunshine, taking a nice midnight stroll, or hanging out inside, having something quiet, some quiet time, something to eat. Anyway, we've got awesome listeners, and my heart is singing to know that everyone does come back for more each time. The numbers of listeners has been growing. Don't forget to go to the Blog Talk Radio, Who's Reading the Organon, and click Listen, Friend, Favorite, and Comment. You can download the old shows and listen to them on your computer, iTunes, or iPod. Today's inspirational quote comes from one from HWC member Dr. Sushil Bal. The highest art one can learn is the art of loving, and that the ultimate creativity and the highest art are born out of a knack, meditation. Thank you, Dr. Sushil. Also, from Twitter, someone has posted, hey, it's all about attitude. My blog post on how attitude can help you succeed, and he gives the link, and I want to read that in a moment, but just one more quote from Dahara says, safeguarding the rights of others is the most noble and beautiful end of a human being, quoted by Cahil Gibran. I want to thank Dahara for that. That's a very pertinent quote in today's world. So we're going back to the previous quote, and it says, having a bad day, your attitude can be your best friend or your worst enemy. It can take you to levels you never thought possible, or it can be the single most limiting element in your life. Your attitude, good or bad, is contagious. It spreads to your coworkers, your family, and especially your clients, affecting everything you do. Having a bad attitude will cost you sales, business, friends, time, and energy. You will never make it to the top of your game if you consistently have, quote, stinking thinking. Of course, everyone has bad days and gets down once in a while. Still, learn to control your attitude and your consistent thoughts and beliefs will always prevail. When you have a good attitude, good things happen. The adage that success is 90% attitude and 10% aptitude is true. I've always noticed that the salespeople with the best attitudes sell more. All superstars have a super attitude. They absolutely refuse to major in the minors or let the small stuff get them down. And I want to thank you for that special blog. I think it's, oh, that's Billy Cox. He's an international Twitter star. And I really want to thank you for that because it's true. And put that into effect in your life and see what it can do for you. I've got a little puzzler today. It's called Birbal the Wise. Emperor Akbar once ruled over India. He was a wise and intelligent ruler, and he had in his court the nine gems, his nine advisors, who were each known for a particular skill, One of these gems was Birbal, known for his wit and wisdom. The story below is one of the examples of his wit. Do you have it in you to find out the answer? One day, a scholar, you know, notice how stories begin once upon a time, or one day, a scholar came to the court of Emperor Akbar and challenged Birbal the Wise to answer his questions, and thus proved that he was as clever as people said he was. He asked Birbal, "Would you prefer to answer 100 easy questions or just a single difficult one?" Both the emperor and Birbal had had a difficult day and were impatient to leave. "Ask me one difficult question," said Birbal. "Well, then tell me," said the man, "which came first into the world, the chicken or the egg?" "The chicken," replied Birbal very confidently. "How do you know?" asked the scholar, a note of triumph in his voice. The puzzler is, what did Birbal answer to the scholar's question? Okay, I'm going to hopefully remember to give you the answer at the end of the show. On HWC News, I want to thank all of the members who continually comment and leave their responses to other people's blogs and forum discussions. This is what keeps our network active. And the new blogs and new discussions are just as pertinent as the older ones. I would like to bring your attention to one by Dr. Dilip Kumar, who has written about gestational diabetes mellitus. And the reason I say that is we've got quite a bit of activity going on with diabetes that comes on in later in life. But what about when a person is born, an infant is born with diabetes? What do you do in this type of situation, or how do you handle it? The other one, which is also an older post, is by Dr. Nina Singla. And she writes about homeopathy or steroids. It's kind of like a question posed to the community for them to think about and answer her situation. And on a new blog that has just been posted today, I'm always thrilled when Dr. Shalandra Kumar Mamgane has posted, because his articles are really, really tutorial. They're very enlightening when he talks about a particular case and we understand exactly the steps that he has gone through to get to a resolution of the problem. As a matter of fact, I think I'll go ahead and read this to you so that you can get an idea of the great discussions that he puts on, his presentations. It's called An Acute Ankle Pain with Swelling. So now we know by the title of his blog exactly what we're going to be listening to. And I recommend people to do that in their titles when they write blogs. So he begins with the date. On 21-3, I think that's March 21st of 1992, Dr. Mamgane was called to see a 40-year-old patient suffering with severe pain, swelling in the right ankle, in the right big toe. The patient was writhing in pain in his bed, and these are the points that the doctor noted. Large swelling around the right ankle, slightest pressure on the swollen ankle caused by the pain, the patient to shriek with pain. The pain was worse always during the night. The pain was aggravated in the cold, and previously he used to vomit mucus and ingest it during severe pain. That sounds like quite a bit of pain, don't you think? His thirst was +2 and increased when he had the pain. There were frequent bouts of paroxysmal cough with expectoration of lumps of mucus and a lot of chilliness, shivering, and yawning. Now that's pretty thorough observation. Then he wants to take in the history. So the past history is the trouble started 6 years ago. So here he's telling when the problem began. He donated blood twice in 1 month. He recalls that he also had a sprain. After about 1.5 years of the above incident, he went on a pilgrimage to Rajasthan in the month of January. where he walked barefooted 108 times around a big temple on a very cold marble floor. When he returned back to Dehradun, he found it very difficult to come out of the car due to severe pain in the right ankle. Since then, the pain is continuing in spite of allopathic and homeopathic treatment. The pain used to worsen intermittently, forcing him to be confined to bed. He had taken the following medicines before Dr. Mamgain was called in. And he was taking Phytolacca, and he explains exactly how much and how often, phosphoric acid, bryonia, China officinalis, rus toxicondron, antimonium crudum, rus tox, and biochemical medicine, cell salts such as natrium mur and ferrum fos and calc fos. So over a period of time with other homeopaths, he's had a lot of different treatments, but somehow it hasn't worked for him. So then this is the diagnosis by the orthopedic surgeon. So he's gone to an allopath, and the surgeon said that he had gouty arthritis, and he also had taken allopathic treatment. So here's the investigations that were taken also on the date that he saw the doctor. ESR 48 mm at the end of 1 hour, uric acid 8.9, blood urea 32 milligrams, Ra factor negative, though the patient was suffering a lot with rheumatic-like pains. And then he tells what remedies, what homeopathic medicines he gave to this patient beginning on that date. The first one was camphora 200, one dose, and then chelidonium 30 c, three times a day. And here's the result. The patient's pain worsened during the night with the dose of camphora, but after taking the dose of chelidonium, he had instant relief and slept well. This was followed by a dose of colchicum 200 every fifth day and chelidonium 30, three times a day, till January, February, March, April, May 24th, 1992. Subsequently, colchicum 200 was given at longer intervals. And then on June the 13th of the same year, the uric acid level came down. And the last medicine was given in 1992 again the following month for 1 week. And during the past 5 years, this patient's pain and swelling have not recurred. The cure is holding. And he also gives us a little bit of discussion with this. He says, as the patient had been taking various homeopathic medicines for a long period, and as camphor antidotes most of the remedies, that's why he gave a dose of camphor 200. And to make the selected remedies work favorably, Kent Repertory was consulted on these following rubrics. Pain in the ankle, worse from motion. Pain in the ankle, rheumatic. Swelling ankle, and swelling ankle rheumatic. And he also looked into the materia medica under chelidonium. Other symptoms of the case were found fitting. Dr. Clark, in his Dictionary of Practical Materia Medica, says in rheumatic affections that chelidonium has a large field covering edema, heat, tenderness, and stiffness as the leading indications. Swelling of the feet, mostly around the ankles. The slightest movement or touch exerted screams. Colchicum is also a gouty remedy and controls serum uric acid. This is via the Aliens Encyclopedia. Hence, so colchicum was given intercurrently. And he says the chelidonium plus the colchicum worked and cured the patient. I really enjoy reading his presentations. They are quite thorough and explanatory and helps us learn quite a bit about our remedies and how he is able to observe the patient and see what the leading symptoms are. Thank you so much. Now we're going to move on to reading of the Organon of Medicine by Samuel Hahnemann. We have been learning recently last week about how the homeopath takes a case. How does a homeopath sit with the client, with the patient, and write his notes? How he is very patient and sits quietly to listen and let the patient tell his story and elicit all of the sensations and experience and the symptoms, the physical symptoms that the person is coping with at the particular time. And also give the history, as you heard Dr. Mom-Gain was able to get from the patient. So in aphorism number 85, Hahnemann continues to outline his method of taking the case notes. He says, he begins a fresh line with every new circumstance mentioned by the patient or his friends, so that the symptoms shall be all ranged separately, one below the other. He can thus add to one line that may at first have been related in too vague a manner, but subsequently more explicitly explained. So here he's telling us, give yourself space to fill in whatever's missing, and also by writing one line and leaving space. And also here he's saying that he's listening to more than one person. He's listening to the patient explain his situation, and he's also consulting possibly with friends to get a different perspective. Moving on to aphorism number 86, when the narrators have finished, so here he's got plural narrators, when the narrators have finished what they would say of their own accord, the physician then reverts to each particular symptom and elicits more precise information respecting it in the following manner. He reads over the symptoms as they were related to him, one by one, and about each of them he inquires further particulars. So here again, it's sort of getting confirmation that the homeopath has heard the words of the patient, has listened and written them down correctly, verbatim, or has understood the meaning of what the patient is explaining and speaking. So when you feed back the information, the patient is hearing his own words reflected and mirrored back to him so that he can say, yes, that's exactly what I mean, or perhaps he will add some new information once he hears what he has spoken. And then he gives further, for example, at what period did this symptom occur? Was it previous to taking the medicine he had hitherto been using, whilst taking the medicine, or only some days after leaving off the medicine? What kind of pain? What kind of pain? What sensation exactly was it that occurred on this spot? Where was the precise spot? Did the pain occur in fits and by itself at various times, or was it continued without intermission? How long did it last? At what time of the day or night, and in what position of the body was it worst or ceased entirely? What was the exact nature of this or that event in circumstance mentioned? Describe in plain words. So this is how the homeopath elicits more detailed information. So in the previous example that Dr. Mom-Gain gave, you could understand that the patient said the pain was so excruciating that when it was touched, he resorted to screams. That's how bad it was. And we're going to move on to aphorism number 87. And thus the physician obtains more precise information respecting each particular detail, but without ever framing his questions so as to suggest the answer to the patient, so that he shall only have to answer yes or no, else he will be misled to answer in the affirmative or negative, something untrue, half true, or not strictly correct, either from indolence or in order to please his interrogator, from which a false picture of the disease and an unsuitable mode of treatment must result. And there's a footnote to aphorism number 87. It states, for instance, the physician should not ask, was not this or that circumstance present? He should never be guilty of making such suggestions, which tend to seduce the patient into giving a false answer and a false account of his symptoms. So here we see that it is very important for the homeopath only to mirror back the exact words of the patient, to write in his notes exactly what the patient states, and not to present suggestions that the patient might said, oh, yeah, that's true, or, yeah, I have that too, or, he outright denies having a particular symptom for one reason or another, for one conscious or unconscious reason. The person who you're taking the case has to feel completely free to speak in his own words, his own feelings and expressions, without being led in any way, it's an art and a skill for the homeopath to learn over time and experience not to present yes and no questions. We have a habit of doing this, and it's kind of relearning if you've ever done that before. And so he's very specific here. Hahnemann is saying that you don't want to mislead to get a wrong answer, whether the person says yes or no, or even an untruth or a half-truth. In other words, maybe it's partially true. To me, when it's a half-truth, it's not a truth at all. So we want to be absolutely correct. And what Hahnemann says the outcome is, if you do take a case in this way by leading the patient on or making a suggestion, that you're going to end up with the wrong answers. You're going to end up with information that is not true and will lead you to a wrong treatment, a wrong unsuitable remedy. So this is a caution that he's presenting. And I think there's time to go ahead for aphorism number 88 today, which states, if in these voluntary details nothing has been mentioned respecting several facts or functions of the body or his mental state, the physician asks, what more can he be told in regard to these parts and these functions, or the state of his disposition or mind? But in doing this, he only makes use of general expressions in order that his informants may be obliged to enter into special details concerning them. For example, what is the character of his stools? How does he pass his water? How is it with his day and night sleep? What is the state of his disposition, his humor, his memory? How about the thirst? What sort of taste has he in his mouth? What kinds of food or drink are most relished? What are most repugnant to him? Has each its full natural taste or some other unusual taste? How does he feel after eating or drinking? Has he anything to tell about the head, the limbs, or the abdomen? So Hahnemann here is giving us examples of how to pose your questions in order to fill in the missing pieces. So when someone says, I have insomnia. So here the person is giving a general label to the fact that he's not sleeping at night. So then the question might be from the homeopath, how is it with your day and night sleep? So this kind of elicits more information. So asking the patient to be more detailed, how is it when you're having this condition? And then that's totally an open-ended question. And another one, let's say the person says, I've got constipation. So then he's asking, what is the character of the stools? So now it's, again, open-ended. He's asking, what kind of a bowel movement are you having? And the same thing, let's say somebody says they get up at night to go to the bathroom and that they have to urinate or empty their bladder. So then Hahnemann says, how do you pass the water? This is an old expression. So you might just say, what is it like to get up in the middle of the night and have to urinate every night so many times? And then he asks, what is the state of his disposition, his humor, and his memory? So again, so if a person comes and says, I'm very forgetful, so tell me more about your memory. Tell me more about being forgetful. And then you'll elicit some more details about what it is that he's this person is forgetful about. Is he going to the store and leaving his purchases on the counter and walking away? Is he forgetting his keys? Is he forgetting people's names? Is he getting lost in places that he's going out and can't find his car in the parking lot? So here you're getting a more explicit narrowing it down in the details to understand exactly how the person is in his life. Okay, let's see some more of the questions that he's got here in aphorism number 88. What about thirst? So perhaps the patient has not even mentioned whether or not they're thirsty. Would we be able to ask about that? Let's say you've taken the whole case and you've got as many details as you need, but you want to differentiate some of the remedies are thirsty. People who need a certain remedy are very thirsty, and some are not thirsty. So you want to find out that quality. So then you might just say, how about your thirst? And then that's, again, open-ended. The patient can say, yes, I need to drink all day long. I take my water bottle with me. In that case, you might even just see from the observation in the case taking that the person is sitting there sipping on the water bottle. What sort of taste has he in his mouth? And something like that, there must be a reason why you're asking such a specific question. And then again, what kinds of food and drink are most relished? So here we often say, do you have any craving for a particular food or a drink? Or do you have any cravings at all for eating or drinking something? And then the person can say yes or no, and then go on and be more detailed about what it is that he's wanting. And this might satisfy him or her in some way. And again, on the other end of the scale, if you relish something, what is repugnant? What are you averse to? Or what makes you feel unwell to eat or drink? And so you can see how Hahnemann has posed these questions in a very open-ended manner, not to lead the patient on into answering what you want or the homeopath or the physician is expecting. So just sit and listen and let the patient speak undeterred, unlimited, unbounded, just able to say what their true experience is. There's only a minute or so left, so I'd like to go back to our little puzzler for the day. It was about an emperor and a wise man, and he asked, would you prefer to answer 100 easy questions or a single difficult one? But the emperor and Birbal, they had a difficult day. They wanted to get out of there. And so the emperor asked, Birbal said, ask me one difficult question. And he was asked, was it first in the world, the chicken or the egg? Birbal replied very confidently, the chicken. Okay, so he gave the emperor his answer. And then the emperor, thought he was going to win this game, and he said, how do you know? And so now you want to know what Birbal answered? Birbal told the scholar, we had agreed you would ask only one question, and you have already asked it. And he and the emperor walked away, leaving the scholar gaping. So I guess it was really a scholar who was asking the question and not the emperor. But you get the point, and we are at the end of the show. I thank you again for listening. Take your Organon off the shelf and read it. Continue to study homeopathy. We are all students every day, learning from life, learning from others, sharing our experience. Thank you so much for listening.
Thank you for listening to Who's Reading the Organon with homeopath Debbie Brook on Homeopathy World Community Blog Talk Radio. Remember to take the Organon off the shelf and read it.